You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. One of the top mental health concerns in our country is anxiety. It's sometimes hard to be clear about what it is, how to recognize it, especially in kids. Identifying a mental health issue like anxiety early on can make a huge difference for a child's future success. Let's get into exactly what anxiety is, what causes it, and how it plays out in our children. With us is Dr. Julie Brakaczewski. She's a clinical psychologist, and she directs Monarch Behavioral Health in Bloomfield Hills. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's focus on anxiety in children, particularly doing so in order to help parents and caregivers identify, understand, and help it. What is anxiety?
It's a complex question because anxiety is a neurocognitive cascade in that an individual or child sees a situation, a stimulus, and then they have a really quick automatic thought. And that thought then causes neurobiological changes that cascade through your body. And then there's a cycle one goes through where you have the thought, experience the physiological piece of the anxiety, and then often, unfortunately, but it's the way of safety and the way we are just made, we avoid the stimuli. And so we then opt out, say, that's too much, that's too scary. And then we lose experience with the stimuli. So in anxiety disorders, it's often a cycle of feeling the anxiety, having that neurocognitive cascade happen, having it feel absolutely terrifying, and then avoiding the stimuli.
And what kinds of stimuli are we talking about?
Every child experiences anxiety. It's a normal part of the human existence. We don't want to get rid of it because it's very adaptive. We would all be in big, big trouble if we didn't have anxiety. And children, as we know, everybody who has children or has any contact with children knows that oftentimes they have some fears that make sense and some fears that don't make any sense. Fear of what's under the bed, fear of the dark, fear of entering a new friend group. And all of those things are very normal. Anxiety, when it reaches to kind of the clinical level, it's more impairing. It lasts more than a couple of days or a couple of weeks, and it seems to be a stable pattern when it's getting in the way of them having friends, doing fun things, their academic success, and their family engagement. You really see that it's crossed a line. It's inhibiting their growth and functioning. And when you see a child that has a really inhibited personality style, oftentimes if there are situational, contextual, environmental effects that really amp that up, it then develops into that cycle where they're avoiding a lot of things and the anxiety grows. So that's kind of where that line exists. But of course, it's a gray line that some kids kind of hop over and then come back, hop over and then come back.
Do we know what causes this all to happen?
We absolutely know there is a hereditary component. If you have a first relative, it is much more likely that you experience anxiety. And there's also then people say, well, that parent's just modeling anxiety. There's a piece of it that is environmental, that we learn from our environment. And not all kids, though, that have anxiety have parents who experience anxiety or close relatives. So there's also environmental and contextual. And then there's the cognitive, so thinking patterns, behavioral patterns, and emotional patterns, which we get stuck in that perpetuate that anxiety cycle.
So this nature-nurture question, it's very complicated when we're talking about anxiety disorders.
And the answer is there's no one answer. I often, when I'm working with families, draw the analogy that anxiety is like, well, most mental health disorders are like a can of paint. And each disorder has their own color. So like if anxiety is green, if you have ever gone to Home Depot or Lowe's, you see when they make the color green, there's actually like 45 different colors that drip into it. And every mental health disorder, including anxiety, has different components, different amounts. Every kid, their anxiety might be the color green, but it's different shades and different tones, and those different components that pour into it make it that child's individual experience.
When can we see anxiety rear its head with a child? How young?
Very early. There are some anxiety diagnoses like separation anxiety. Separation anxiety is very normal.
Who hasn't been through that in Europe?
Exactly.
You're trying to get to work and your child is clinging to your leg and howling.
Screaming and crying. Yeah. You're wiping snot. It's terrifying for you as a parent as well as the child.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's pretty normal. And that flares up now and again. But there are some kids where it's not a flare up. It's a constant state where they're terrified of caregivers leaving. The whole context, situation, environment feels insecure and unstable. And that can happen, you know, as early as 18 months, 12 months. We sometimes see kids that are pre-verbal that have that inhibited personality style, and they feel very anxious. So that part of the nature, nurture, some of the components, we know that if you have an anxious, inhibited personality style, you're more at risk for anxiety. But we usually do not diagnose a quote-unquote anxiety disorder and really look at that clinical threshold until somewhere between 3 to 6 years old. And to diagnose a three-year-old, it would have to be pretty severe.
Okay.
But I have seen some older toddlers with OCD and anxiety disorder.
So it sounds like these things start really becoming present when they get into kindergarten or they're into first grade.
It can, absolutely.
Is that when you typically start seeing people bringing children in?
Yeah, the average age of onset is between 9 and 11. That's when things kind of reach this fever pitch that individuals often seek services. But parents are getting more and more proactive and trying to address anxiety disorder or just anxiety challenges if it hasn't met the clinical threshold, anxiety challenges. So we are seeing kids younger and younger, and that is a great thing.
So before we talk about how it's treated, is there a fairly typical array of signs and symptoms that should let parents know that this isn't just a phase or, you know, a toddler meltdown? What would be some signs and symptoms that should trigger a thought in your mind?
That's so important to talk about because there's a cluster of kiddos with anxiety that look like they have anxiety. They are worried. They are nervous. They appear anxious. They walk into a room and freeze and won't talk. They really have difficulty talking to others outside of the home or making new friendships. It's difficult for them to approach new situations. That's fairly obvious. There are other kids that we mislabel as oppositional or defiant. They're the kickers and screamers. It's unfair. When we talk about anxiety, there's the fight or flight system in our brain. It's very adaptive. We often label the kids that are the flight kids that are running away and look so scared and anxious. They're the anxious ones. They need empathy and support. But the kids who are fighters, who are more oppositional when they feel anxious, we often feel that they are defiant and have conduct issues. But oftentimes when you get to the core of the issue with those kids, it's actually anxiety, fear, and worry. And it's important for parents to know that their anxiety disorder often looks like other disorders. It's sneaky. It often looks like ADHD because kids get inattentive. They have trouble concentrating, completing tasks. You tell them three things to do and they might hear one because their mind is otherwise occupied and they are on panic mode. Mm. There's also a lot of physiological things, stomach aches, headaches, vague bone and joint aches, and things that don't match up with medical diagnoses. And you see that chronically.
So how treatable is this?
It is extremely treatable, which is what is the amazing and wonderful part and why I love my job so much, because I get to experience the amazing trajectory of treatment with kids and families. It's extremely treatable.
So give me a typical, mom and dad bring in a youngster. Everybody's frustrated.
Absolutely.
Everybody's frustrated. There's things happening at school. This sweet kid can be so difficult at home. What kind of patterns have been set up with all of these dynamics before they arrive at your office?
Parents often have a clue that something is going on, but they say, okay, well, this can't possibly be anxiety because my kid is having tantrums, or they're not paying attention in school, and what is this? Or we thought that there was a medical diagnosis to be had with these stomach issues or intestinal issues, and they come in, and we take an approach called cognitive behavioral therapy. And in cognitive behavioral therapy, you generally gather data first. You send home tracking documents so that you can understand what comes just before anxiety episodes, or do the anxiety episodes look like, and then what happens afterwards. And that helps you understand the patterns of what is going on. And we often see that some kids have very reactive systems, like their anxiety knob has been turned to full throttle. Mm. And so something happens and they perceive a fear cue. So something feels scary and their body reacts so strongly. They feel like they might vomit, they get dizzy, they get a headache, they might start shaking, they get really hot and sweaty. And then comes the behavioral cascade, what they do next, because our biological states motivate us to do stuff. Then they enter in, and either they withdraw, and then oftentimes, because we love our children, and teachers love their children, so we kind of aid and abet anxiety, and we help those kids not engage in the feared stimulus. So if they're scared to go in the classroom, sometimes we'll take them in a different classroom. If they're scared to go on the roller coaster, we say, okay, let's just go in the park and sit down and have a picnic. And that's not to say that we should ignore children's fear.
But you're not dealing with what's causing
absolutely.
This behavior.
Absolutely.
And then you said some withdraw and can others, then you talked about the fight or flight.
Yes,
so you have others
absolutely.
Who are, when you say oppositional, what does that look like?
Sometimes they'll yell, no, I'm not doing that. Get away from me. They may look mean. They may look like they're insulting you. Ultimately, that child is trying to get a need met. They're trying to have somebody else regulate what is going on. Put the clamp down. Make my world safe. Mm-hmm. Make my world secure. And so those kids will, you know, the range of tantrums. They might just be sassy. It might go all the way up to full-on tantrum, writhing around on the ground, punching, kicking, sometimes spitting, saying nasty things.
So you get these sheets, basically a diary of what's happening.
Absolutely.
How do you go about turning that anxiety down, treating that anxiety?
And there are several components to treatment in that we kind of look at, you know, back to the paint can analogy, what colors dripped into their color of anxiety? What tone is their color of anxiety and how does it look? Most empirically, so research-supported protocols to treat anxiety include an anxiety management component, which is this piece that helps you learn to be aware of your body, how to label emotions, because anxiety is terrifying, and it's very smart, actually, to turn it into anger. Anger is active, and it controls the environment. So to understand to label it truly as anxiety and ask for what you really need, so labeling it, becoming aware of the cues, the child becomes aware of their bodily cues. We help parents turn up their sensitivity to the cues that the child is starting to feel anxious, because kids are also really good at learning how to inhibit anxiety and not show it until it's past the point.
And then it erupts.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. That anxiety management piece of it, relaxation strategies, when to use distraction and how to use it effectively so that it's not avoidance. And there's a parenting component where we help parents in their own style, in their own culture and values, figure out how best, where the best practices and how to overlay those on top of their family and their family interactions to help the child move through this anxiety and come out the other end, having experienced the anxiety, but knowing that they can conquer it and they are in control, and that it's okay to experience anxiety. It's healthy, it's normal, and it doesn't mean something horrible is going to happen.
Can you treat anxiety and panic attacks without medication?
Absolutely. Particularly cognitive behavioral therapy. The other component to therapy is often something called exposure-based treatment. Those are treatments in which, in a really controlled, thoughtful, often creative, which is the fun part of treatment, we help kids and families engage in the very situations that they're fearing. And oftentimes we can get really creative. For instance, if a child is coming in and they're avoiding going to school, they're absolutely terrified to go to school, they're kicking and screaming in the morning, they won't get in the car, we often say, okay, what's going on? And we do our evaluation, we gather data, it comes out, oh, perhaps that child is afraid that they're going to get sick in school. So we take a creative approach in exposing them to pictures, sometimes video, sometimes audio, of, for instance, vomit. Super gross, but pretty funny to kids sometimes. And so we get through that, and we also do something called cognitive restructuring. So we help address the cognitive thinking traps that they're falling into so that they don't fall into those traps anymore.
This takes time, doesn't it? This has not come in for a couple sessions and
well,
all is well? Or can
sometimes,
you see
pretty immediate
changes?
You can see really immediate changes in the kiddos that the anxiety is very driven by context and environment, and we change the contextual pressures very quickly. You can see very immediate results. You can get results within 4 sessions. Other kids, it's sometimes 8 or 12 sessions. And some children require the ongoing support to keep using their skills and strategies. And of course, parenting in general, it's not easy. And it doesn't come with an instruction manual, especially when you have a child whose anxiety dial is turned up to extreme.
Yeah.
So they often require ongoing support.
But having this identified and dealt with when they're young, how can that affect their long-range lives?
And this is probably one of the pieces that fuels my practice so much. I'm so passionate about it because the research clearly shows us that anxiety disorders in childhood do not get better unless they are treated in general. There's a slice of kids that will get better on their own and quote unquote grow out of it, but the majority of them do not. And in fact, anxiety disorders in childhood, obviously we all grow up. They turn into different, more complex, more entrenched anxiety disorders as adults, as well as depression, substance use and abuse. We can see the writing on the wall very early. So it's so amazing when children come in and change their thinking process and learn all the skills and strategies, they enter adolescence and adulthood on a completely different path.
Do you think we're seeing anxiety in kids today more than we have in the past?
Globally, society-wise, there's like an epidemic increase. By 18, 30% or more of kids will experience an anxiety disorder. That's a third of our population. That's really incredible. And that was a measurement taken, I believe it was 2007.
Why do we think this is? Why are we seeing young people coming in, and especially it sounds like about the time they graduate from high school?
We don't have a great idea of exactly why, because we look back at data, and in terms of research, you cannot retrospectively look back and design a causational study. So we know there's these correlational things going on with individual thinking patterns, and we look to those to try and gain insight. But one thing that we know is happening is that individuals, it's called locus of control, how you feel, what happens to you is controlled. Back in 30s, 40s, 50s, somewhat 60s, individuals really felt, if I put in effort, I can get what I want. And the focus was on self-development, and fulfillment came from internal sources. There's been a shift as kind of culture has become more materialistic to external locus of control. It's very clear that from 1950s to current time, that trend of increasing where we feel that the control is external to us, it feels scary because the things that are external to us, like for instance, I am 13 and I desperately want an Xbox. I need to work really hard, and you may or may not get to spend that money on an Xbox, and it may feel fulfilling, and it's temporary. There's something else that's coming out in 6 months that's going to totally invalidate that piece of control and what you executed. So there's a societal move. There's also much lower social connectedness. And we can kind of point the finger in lots of different directions.
Dr. Julie Brakaczewski, clinical psychologist and the director of Monarch Behavioral Health, located in Bloomfield Hills. Thank you so much for being with us today on Minding Michigan.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.